Podcast. We are here. I'm here with my brother, Jack.
What up?
And today we're going to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves. We're going to talk about some excellent gameplay. We are 2-0, and we are playoff bound.
Undefeated.
That's what I'm talking about. So, let's get started. What a game. What a game. We made those nuggets look like chicken nuggets.
We did.
Rubio made Moutier look like a middle school backup point guard.
I mean, he more made Clarkson look like that in the previous game.
That's true.
But, yeah. I mean, Denver's not a very good team.
Except for the fact that they beat Houston.
At Houston,
who you picked, let's not forget, as the regular season champ, and who I said from the get-go that they are going to be mediocre when you're talking about the West.
I picked him third in the West. I didn't think of him as the champ. I went Spurs, OKC, Houston.
I don't know about that.
That's true. We can listen to the podcast.
You've been talking Houston. No, we go back to the first podcast.
I picked him second. I've always picked Golden State first, I promise.
We need to go back and check that. You may have picked him second.
And then I put OKC ahead in the next one.
Whatever.
Still, I stand by it. You're going to look back at the end of the season and be like, wow, Houston was really deep. They've got great bench, and they were able to withstand a regular season and have a good record.
Everybody's talking about how deep their bench is. Problem with that is that Dwight Howard's hurt, and Ty Lawson isn't even good. So, Houston, not that good. But here's my point. Denver beat Houston. They're respectable. Moutier's a beast, and we put them to shame, mostly because of a guy named Karl Towns. Karl was a monster on the boards, a monster. 4 blocks, 26 points, 14 rebounds. Eat your heart out, Anthony Davis. As of right now, Towns is the best
player
in the NBA, minus Steph Curry, because he was unbelievable the other night. So yeah, we look good. What are some of your takeaways from that game? Talk Nuggets game, and we can talk Lakers.
Yeah, Nuggets game, it was interesting. Our defense, I definitely think it's improved from last year, but I don't want to attribute the low scoring and their inefficiency just to our defense. I think they honestly missed a ton of open shots. And we did a decent job, and I think Karl Towns is the real presence of, not only did he get 4 blocks, but people definitely altered their shots and thought twice about going in with him in there. But I do think they missed a lot of open shots, and they are a team that's not that good with a young point guard who's still learning how to play.
It's been interesting the way we've been running our offense essentially through Towns and Wiggins. And it's almost putting, I would say, too much pressure on Wiggins to try to make his own shots. There are multiple times he gets the ball and we stop and he backs up to the basket, which is, I mean, he's getting to the line, he's making some good plays in spite of it, but it's not an efficient offense. I feel like it's built on those guys getting themselves baskets. Now, a few times it opened up for Towns, but it didn't look pretty.
Yeah, I mean, our offense did not look pretty. When we hit Towns, we got him in a lot better positions than when we would just give it to Wiggins and basically watch him as he tried to score. The problem with what we're doing with Wiggins is we're giving him the ball in a post-up position, but far away from the basket. We're doing absolutely no action in order to get him a post-up where he's in or near the lane. So we're giving him these ISO post-up early in the possession, and we're just relying on him to create, which is terrible offense in the modern NBA. None of the best teams do not do that unless they have Kevin Durant or something like that. But it is really inefficient, and yeah.
Now, we look efficient when Rubio's going hard. When he's going to the basket, when he's making things happen, we're getting good looks. The problem is when he goes off the floor and they freaking put Zach LaVine in at the point, which he's not a point guard. He's not efficient as a point guard. He holds the ball always a second too long. He should be playing two guard for us, and they keep trying to play him at the point. During the game against the Lakers, when Rubio was in, we were plus 26 as a team, and then the moment they put LaVine in, it was a disaster, an utter disaster. You know who should be playing, Jake?
Tyus freaking Jones.
That's what I'm talking about. Tyus Jones, who was a monster in the preseason, who single-handedly led Duke to a national championship by himself. He had nobody else on that team. It was him alone.
Correct. There were no other NBA players on the team. There weren't two other top 10 picks.
There wasn't. But I, not just being, this isn't just the homer in me. We're not even living in Minnesota. We're in Kansas. We don't care about homerism. We think Tyus Jones is a legitimate player and should be given a chance to play, especially when you're trying to play LaVine at the point guard.
Zach LaVine in his career has never shown one thing about him, perhaps possibly being able to handle the ball mediocrely, that he should play point guard. Nothing about him suggests that he is effective when running an offense. And the idea that Sam Mitchell is trying to make him into something he's not after he spent 82 games last season proving that he should not be a point guard is just ridiculous. And especially we struggle with him and Martin in together. The ball movement is just so bad and our offense is so stagnant. And I do not get the LaVine at point guard movement. His strength is his athleticism and his ability to score, I believe. And I believe that's probably where he has his highest upside. But we're not allowing him to do that when we're playing him at point guard.
I 100% agree. I don't know. I mean, our second unit right now, there's potential, but there are just things that don't quite fit. And I think a lot of it is early in the season and Sam Mitchell being thrown into the mix. How do you think Sam Mitchell has done so far?
I think he's done not a good job. We're 2-0, and Cat played great, so it's hard to critique him. But at the same time, everything I see, I don't like. I can't give that much flack for offense. Oh, I can give some. Our offense, you know, it is really stagnant. Doesn't look that good. But it didn't last year either. The rotations to me make absolutely no sense. I don't even think Tayshaun Prince should be playing. Sam Mitchell also is married to this idea that he loves a 10-man rotation. And so he's all about finding those 10 players. And if he's going to play only 10 players, I don't think Tayshaun Prince should be in that 10. But what we do is we start him. So he's on the floor with Wiggins, Rubio, Towns, and Garnett. It's actually a decent defensive lineup, but the problem with that is that makes our backups Bielitsa, Martin, Muhammad, LaVine, and then Ding. And that makes a disaster in terms of our backcourt defense with our subs. And by starting Prince doesn't make sense in terms of strengths and weaknesses. We had Wiggins not guarding their best player, which I think there are several problems with, because one, Prince's defense has very much declined. When Kobe went off, it was all on Prince. Prince is not nearly a defender he used to be. He got just yammed on by Gallinari. Ironically, right after the announcers were like, Prince, still a great defender. And then Gallinari went by him and jammed it.
How old is he? 40?
34, 5? 34. I don't know, something like that.
He looks like he's 40.
He is born in 1980. So whatever that makes him. But point of the thing is Wiggins did a much better job, one on Kobe, and Wiggins isn't a very good off-ball defender right now. He's actually a negative off-ball defender, but where he does okay is when he's guarding their best player. He shut down Kobe and made Kobe so inefficient compared to what Prince was doing. And by starting Prince at that lineup, we're not taking advantage of any of our strengths as starting lineup or any of the weaknesses of our backups.
One of the things I thought about that game was fun to watch, but for very strange reasons, was the fact that Kobe took 24 shots. And for some reason, the announcers and the fans somehow think that Kobe was helping his team. I loved it. I love watching Kobe shoot the ball. There's nothing greater than watching Kobe try to be Kobe. But that's part of the reason why we won that game. I mean, you look down the stretch of that game, we didn't play well, particularly well. Rubio was fantastic. Wiggins was non-existent, playing like he was back in KU in his first few games, looked sheepish, looked tired.
Back spasms.
Yeah, he reportedly had back spasms. He didn't look himself. We didn't deserve to win that game, but Kobe kept us in it, and I like it. I like the fact that we're sneaking some early wins early on. It's given our playoff run quite a boost.
Yeah, there's this really interesting thing around Kobe and a lot of fans of the NBA. I was talking with some fans who just have this cultish feel that Kobe is still one of the greatest in the world, which just is not true. And I don't understand what it is about Kobe that makes him and other people still think that he is in this upper echelon of NBA players. I don't even know if he didn't play this season, the Lakers might end up being better than if he did play, I believe.
Can I tell you my conspiracy theory?
Say it.
The LA Lakers right now are doing some really shady things. You see, they are wanting to tank, but they don't want to appear as if they are tanking because they are LA. They don't need to tank. They've never had a tank in their entire existence. But here's what's happening. They know that Kobe is an egomaniac. They know that Kobe is going to take 20, 30, 40 shots if they let him. They know that it's not helping them win games. And Kobe is going to get his stats. He's going to get his records. He's going to continue to pass player after player on the all-time list. Kobe's getting what he wants. The fans are getting what they want. And guess what, people? The GM is getting exactly what he wants. They are losing games. They are going to get high picks. Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, and guess what? They want the one and only Ben freaking Simmons.
Here's the one problem, if that conspiracy theory is true, is that by playing Kobe, they're absolutely delaying the development of D'Angelo Russell. When D'Angelo Russell was so successful in college, it was mainly off of the pick and roll and when he was creating action. With Kobe Bryant, he has the ball in his hands so much, D'Angelo Russell isn't able to do what he's good at and what he needs to be able to do if he's going to be a great player in the league. So I think playing with Jordan Clarkson and Kobe Bryant is a really tough situation for Russell right now.
All right, right now, gun to your head, who's better at the end of their career, Emmanuel Mudiay or D'Angelo Russell? Russell. 3, 2, 1.
Mudiay.
Ooh, you went with the Tyreek Evans. Interesting.
Is he not
Tyreek Evans? Putting up big stats, lots of turnovers, playing with this freakish athletic body, but is he really a point guard? Is he really going to be good? I don't know.
He is really a point guard. He has vision. That's very clear.
That's what they said about Tyreek.
That's not what they said about Tyreek as much. That isn't, you know, the problem with Tyreek is he couldn't shoot. Emmanuel Mudiay can shoot. The myth that everybody built up that Emmanuel Mudiay wasn't able to shoot long distance is being proved that's not true. Even though he's shooting at a terrible clip right now, overall from the field, it's clear that he has an ability to shoot and I believe he'll develop a jump shot. And I'm saying all this, I love Russell. I loved him coming out of the draft and I still do.
Who's in a better position to succeed right now, D'Angelo Russell or Emmanuel Mudiay?
I mean, Mudiay has like a team that doesn't have as many good young assets as Lakers, so I think Lakers, due to the fact that they are in LA and also have, you know, Julius Randle and Jordan Clarkson, have maybe a little better scope on the rise. But for this season, definitely, without question, Emmanuel Mudiay, because he's able to do what he's good at. He's able to run a lot of minutes at point guard and have the ball in his hands, where Russell's putting in a position that is not natural to him and not where he'll succeed.
Interesting. Well, we got off track there. We like talking about the draft picks, where we follow the draft pretty closely, especially when we have potential for number one pick. Look, we're 2-0. Let's talk about Towns a little bit. Holy smokes.
Whew.
There are a few things that make him such a special player. He shoots the ball. He had a couple step backs. He had a couple plays where he caught the ball and shot the ball.
He had a Euro.
He had a Euro step. The way he moves, the way he can pull up from mid-range and probably from three-point land, just hasn't done it much yet. I'm loving what I'm seeing. Farther along than I realized. I think farther along than anybody realized because of his minutes limitation in college. I don't think people got to see how good he actually was. And, I mean, people have kind of placed Okafor for the longest time as that guy, as the number one draft pick. So they watched him far more closely than Towns. And, I don't know, he looked awesome.
Yeah, I mean, all the advanced, if you look at advanced stats and really examine what they did in college, that was made it very clear that Towns was really, really great in college. It was just...
Okay, can we overreact a little bit? Here's what we're going to do. Who is going to have a better career when it's all said and done? Gun to your head. Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis.
Moron. You are wrong. Second, Karl-Anthony Towns, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Okay. Okay, were you even watching the same game that I was watching? Did you not see? Let's go back and look at Anthony Davis's first half of his career. Let's look at his rookie year. Did he even score 20 points in the first month of playing NBA basketball? No. Anthony Davis.
Hey, no, you don't know that. He did.
Jake, you understand that right now, as of right now, in Cat's rookie season, right? The very beginning he's ever played in the NBA, he is out scoring, out rebounding, out blocking Anthony Davis.
It's been two games. You know who else did this in a stretch of two games? In a stretch of eight games? Jeremy Lin! In a stretch of eight games, he was the best player in the world. He was unbelievable. Two games is such a small sample size, you can't get anything from it. If that's true at this point in the season, CJ McCollum should be an all-star. Ricky Rubio is the second best point guard in the NBA.
Well, he is.
Okay.
Who's the best? Chris Paul?
Steph Curry.
Oh, so you're... Whoa. For those of you who don't know, Jack has a little crush on Chris Paul, thinks he is maybe the greatest player of all time. Jake, did you just say that Ricky Rubio is better than Chris Paul? I think you just said
that. No. I said
you
Steph just Curry said is better than Chris Paul.
No. You said Ricky Rubio would be the second best point guard in the league.
No.
That's what you said. It's on the podcast. We can go back and listen to it.
Let me explain what happened. I said, if we're going to go through a two-game sample size, then you could say Ricky Rubio is the second best in the NBA based on his stats. And I the reason I said that is because that is ridiculous. He is not the second best player in the NBA. And so you're overreacting like nonsense. I don't know why you're doing this. You know Anthony Towns, if you had a gun to your head, you would not bet he'd be better than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I don't know. He's doing things that he's got the sky hook. He's got this pull. Did Kareem have a pull up fadeaway jumper? No, he had a sky hook.
Kareem also had MVP seasons 15 years apart. He was an alien. He lasted forever. Had the only unstoppable
and
move
also
in history.
Starred in the movie Airplane, which was one of my favorite movies.
Unbelievable.
We should go back and watch that.
Absolutely.
You ever been in a Turkish prison? All right, moving on.
So what do you make though of Karl Anthony Towns' first two games, him shining so much?
It's been interesting. I think part of it, and this is part of the sad reality of the unfortunate world of the Timberwolves basketball, is that one of the things you're seeing and why young guys are able to shine right now is we have a point guard who's not hurt and who's playing at a high level. And even when, you know, game two against Denver, he didn't put up big numbers, Rubio. He didn't drop 28 points. Just his presence on the floor allows for a different kind of ball movement that gets him good shots. I mean, you look at Towns' shots. He took good shots. Some of them were garbage, rebound, dunks. Some of them were things around the rim. But
there
were
like two of them that Rubio just gave him, basically.
Right, basically. But that's what I'm saying is he's allowing him to be the kind of player that he is. And on top of that... We're just a team right now that I think is a great. We're like fertile soil for the young garden to bloom. That is what we are right now, and I think that once Wiggins gets back into Wiggy world and starts playing like he was last season, I think that both of those guys are going to have some monster games this year. Here's kind of the weird space that we're in is that you've got Karl Anthony Towns is playing, you know, two games, get it, small sample size, playing really well. You've got these young guys who are playing good, a mix of a bunch of veterans, and if we keep winning games, I mean, that's a really strange place to be in because we could potentially lose our pick, we could potentially get stuck in being too good too soon. Question here, though, is do we have two guys that are the franchise guys that are going to carry us into the dynasty? They're not one, not two,
not three,
not four, five probably.
Eight.
Okay.
Eight is the number I've always stick to.
Okay, championships. Are these the two guys who are going to do that? Or do we need to keep losing and keep
winning? No, we don't.
Danny Ainge style.
No, okay. That is, and Danny Ainge,
Sam Hinkie.
Okay. Better. Yeah, no, I've loved what we've seen in Karl Towns. Everyone, I think, is overreacting, talking about how...
He's Kareem.
Yeah, how he's Kareem. But that's cool. We should overreact. You know, it's fun. It's early in his career. He's been unbelievable. He joined LeBron James in some statistical analysis of how young he is, and he got like 28 and 14 rebounds. But we'll see how it all pans out. One thing I want to bring up, I'm going to say it something, and I want you to respond how you feel about it immediately.
Okay.
All right. Post-rock music.
Beautiful, uplifting, transcendent, makes you want to float in the sky.
Great. George Clooney.
Good-looking, old, married, movies. Ocean's 11.
Nikola Pekovic.
Moron. Big. Giant oaf. Slower than all Get Out. I used to love Pekovic, and I hate that I started with moron. That's the first thing that came to my mind, because I do not think he's a part of this team's future, even though I'm considering picking him up for fantasy, because he's a rebound machine. Those are my thoughts.
Okay. Nikola Pekovic is still on our roster. That's something, like, I thought I was, you know, sitting there this morning, and then I just thought, hey, Nikola Pekovic is on our roster. Dang it! Like, that is such a bummer about life, right? What place does he have on our roster?
But think about this. Back when Minnesota was like, people were thinking, hey, maybe this is the Kevin Love era. Maybe Kevin Love's going to take us to the playoffs. We were winning 40-something games with Pekovic as our number two scoring option.
Yeah, so he signed a 20-year-old five who couldn't defend anyone to a five-year...
But think back to when he was playing...
$60 million contract.
When he was playing at his prime, tell me you didn't like Pekovic.
I liked Pekovic. As soon as we signed the deal, I thought that deal is stupid as crap.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, we have him for 3 years on $12 million. Here's my question for you. Let's say he gets healthy. He returns. He's able to play. Should we even play him? Should he play over Gorgie and Carl?
If I am Sam Mitchell, first thing I would do is fire myself.
Milt Newton would have to do that.
Well, I would just resign.
Okay.
But the second thing I would do is I would say, I would waive him. Why? No, I wouldn't do that. How many years do we have on contract?
Three.
I wouldn't waive him. I would. What do we do? This is a horrible decision. I mean, I guess you play him. You got to play him.
Why? It just takes away from developing our good assets.
But he's... yeah.
I mean, yeah, we're in a pickle. The only thing that could possibly save us is if the new CBA had an amnesty clause in it, so we could use our amnesty on Nikola Pekovic, but I doubt that's going to happen. And I think amnesty is the dumbest rule that just kind of saves franchise. If you don't know what an amnesty clause is, what it is you can take one player from your roster and you still have to pay that player, but their salaries don't count towards your salary cap or towards your luxury tax. So you waive them, and you have to pay them in real dollars, but you don't have to pay them, or your salary cap isn't counted against because of them. And so if last CBA had an amnesty clause, and if this new one did, I see no reason that we shouldn't use it on Nikola Pekovic, but I don't think it will.
All right, we're going to play a game.
Okay.
I'm going to say a name, and you're going to tell us whether or not this player is on our team next season. Are you ready?
What I want or what will actually happen?
What will actually happen.
Oh.
Here we go. Sam Mitchell.
Yes.
Adrian Payne.
Yes.
Kevin Martin.
No.
Tayshaun Prince.
No.
Andre Miller.
No.
Damian Rudez.
No.
Andrew Wiggins.
Yes.
I almost stopped you with that one. Nikola Pekovic.
Yes.
And last but not least, Ricky Rubio.
Yes.
All right, interesting. So you don't think... we're going to be keeping around Adrian Payne.
I said yes to Adrian Payne.
Oh, you did say yes to Adrian Payne. Why are we going to keep him?
Because nobody wants him.
We got him on a cheap contract.
We'll have him for $2 million next year. There's not really much we can do with him.
Yeah, I guess we're not paying him that much.
Yeah. But I don't think he's very good at basketball.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Hopefully, he's only 25. Maybe he'll develop into, you know, a serviceable third string, below average power forward.
Yeah. That's what we need. Well, and Garnett, I mean, we've got him, what, for 2 years?
Yeah, who knows, though. But his contract, we have him this year, next year.
What if Garnett...
if he plays next year, he'll break the record for seasons in a league.
Was that held by Robert Parrish?
It's Robert Parrish, somebody else, and Garnett.
So, Kevin Garnett, the rumor, the talk around town was that him and Flip Saunders, their plan was to co-own the team together, along with the other owners. Let's take a moment, talk about Flip. Where were you when you heard the news?
I was in my basement, and yeah, it was pretty shocking. It just came, it happened so fast, and I don't think anybody realized, unless you were close to the situation, how bad a condition he was. So yeah, it was pretty,
I mean, it was so shocking. Bizarre about, when the news came that he was going to be taking a leave, they made it sound like this is very treatable. He's stepping down for a bit to get some work done on it. But they made it sound like things were going to be fine. And obviously the family didn't want people knowing much of what was going on, which is very understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a shock. And when a coach makes such a wave in their passing, as Flip did, if you've been watching ESPN, if you've been watching interviews with different players, when they make that big of a wave, that's not so much about their ability to coach. Not that he wasn't a great coach. He did some awesome things as a coach. But it says a lot about his character and the kind of impact that he had on guys off the floor. You know, I loved watching that. Did you get to watch that interview with KG when Flip was fired? After Flip was fired?
No.
You need to watch it. It's about a 20-minute interview. Flip, or KG, is being interviewed about him, you know, leaving the team after their big run. And it's a really emotional interview, and you could tell how much of a mentor that Flip was to KG and how much he developed him as a player, and something special.
Yeah, I mean, Flip did some really great things throughout his career, and those, you know, mid-to-mid-late 2000s with Detroit. They were a really good team, and he did some really, I think, clever things offensively. And while we may have in the past, you know, talked down on on this modern NBA, some of the stuff he does X's and O's wise, it's always been very clear that he had a genuine, like, passion and care for his players. And when you listen to him talk about the team, it always seemed like he always had their best interest in mind. You know, with some other coaches, you're not really sure exactly what they want. But with Flip, it just seems like he genuinely cared for his players. And everybody that he's coached that's coming out and talking about him only say the highest things about him as a man and how much he really, really invested into their lives. And yeah, it's a pretty tragic loss.
When he woke up, there's a story about Saunders waking up in 2014, on the morning of the draft, and he had a premonition that he was going to select Zach LaVine as the 13th overall pick. He actually wrote his name down on a piece of paper that morning, and when his vision came true, he gave that piece of paper to Zach and said, you know, this is a sign of faith that we've wanted you. This isn't you didn't fall into our hands. We were going after you. Something about the way he could instill faith and trust in players, and the players liked him, and yeah, we're going to miss him for all kinds of reasons.
When somebody who's well-known dies, I'm usually honestly not, like, hit that hard. It's always sad, but emotionally it usually doesn't affect me much. But this one is actually probably one of the sadder ones I've ever dealt with. I don't know. I really respect Flip, and he's just, you know, been a big part of this organization.
Absolutely. And we can't forget, he made the most incredible franchise-changing trade maybe in the history of the Minnesota Timberwolves by bringing Andrew Wiggins and dumping off Kevin Love, who was our ticket to mediocrity.
I mean, he drafted KG, didn't he?
He did.
Yes.
So, I think.
No, he did.
Okay.
If you look at what the Timberwolves, you know, the two big moves really in our history, you could also maybe say drafting Kevin Love over O.J. Mayo. That was a smart play, yeah. But I don't. That wasn't him.
You gotta understand too.
He's been a part of our big, big.
We talked down on Kevin Love because you know he's for the Cleveland Cavaliers and never really quite got us to the playoffs. But he did bring us Andrew Wiggins. It was all part of the plan.
Oh yeah,
we knew.
We knew
when Andrew Wiggins was 14 years old. All right, we're going to transition here and continue to talk about our roster a little bit, some of the deeper recesses of the Timberwolves roster, which gets a little scary. But here's another player that I like, but we're going to play a little game. Jake, we're going to flip the roles here. I'm going to give you a name, and I want you to give me the first thing that comes to your mind. Don't think about it. Just say what comes on your mind. You ready? Bill Clinton.
Gross. Blech. Monica Lewinsky.
That's it. James Jones.
Three pointers. Cool. Funny looking. Miami Heat. Sly.
Bjork.
What?
You don't even know who Bjork is. Okay, is here we go.
Position?
I'm gonna try this. Nemanja Bjelica.
Belly. Great. Stretches floor. Fun to watch. Versatile. Bad at defense. White.
That he is. That he is. All right. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on Bjelica. How do you say his first name?
Nemanja Bjelica.
Nemanja. I like Nemanja.
Okay.
Nemanja Bjelica.
First thing I want to do is I want to give Matt credit where credit's due. Last night, Dave Benz said that, the Timberwolves announcer said that, the team has officially nicknamed Bjelica Belly. When Matt and I talked about Bjelica way back in the summer, before he even committed to coming here, he was like, I cannot pronounce that name. I'm going to call him Belly.
I said that first. You heard it here first.
We've been calling him Belly forever, and we feel kind of offended that the Timberwolves never asked us for a good nickname.
I'm still going to call him Nemanja Bjelica.
Okay, that's cool. But I really, really like Belly. He stretches the floor. He can make plays happen, too. Like, he sees the floor well, and he can handle it. And defensively, you know, he'll definitely have challenges, and he's not great. But he's a little better than I thought he would be. He works hard at it. He pursues rebounds hard. He actually really goes after them. And I've been really pleased with Belly. He's 27, so I don't know how much he's going to improve, but he's on a $4 million contract, so I really like him on our roster. But I understand, too, he is very tradable if an even better asset opens up. But I really, really like Belly, and I like him closing games. I like him in the lineup a lot. He's so much better than Adrian Payne. He's great.
Here's my thing about Belly. I kind of feel like he's that guy when you're in the grocery store and you're in line about to check out, and he's kind of scanning your food. He's the checkout guy. And you're like, I could beat this guy in one-on-one. And so you say, hey, you want to go out back and play one-on-one? And then he rips off his shirt, and underneath he's wearing a Minnesota Timberwolves jersey, and he smokes you. Doesn't look like a good player. Just looks like a, you know, a grocery store attendant guy.
Yeah, well, I see your point, but it's also really stupid because he's 6'10". If you saw him in a grocery store, you'd
he's
be
6'10",
like...
He's 6'10",
240. Oh, man, this guy's huge. You would never think you could beat him one-on-one.
Isn't this guy basically just Nikolaj Pekovic 2.0?
No, not at all. Pekovic had a game that was bound to not evolve well, and he had, you know, Belly's not a great defender, but he has other strengths that don't make it as important to be a rim protector as Pekovic did. Pekovic was playing beside Kevin Love. We had two people who couldn't defend. Belly would be playing more beside Gorgui or Karl Towns, people who could, you know, complement him. And Belly has a game that seems like it doesn't rely on, like, physical tools or athleticism as much, but more just craftiness and vision and shooting. So I think Belly is a different situation than Pekovic, but I think it is a very real possibility that he won't progress as much as people think, because he's 27. He's in his prime right now, but he's not adjusted to the NBA.
So you're saying is he's a guy who'd be a great fit on a team that wants to win now.
He'd be a great fit for, like, a Spurs.
And he's a great contract. He is the guy that we trade for a great player.
That we have it. That is an option. Trade him to Sacramento. Get McLemore.
Ben McLemore. We've been saying that trade for a long time, even though he's just an average NBA player / shooter. But he fit their team better.
He's a pretty decent shooter. Yeah. That's what he does.
He's
most.
KU. I'll take him. You know,
him and Andrew have that, you know,
a KU connection. I like it.
But I like Bailey. To I don't know if we yeah. What we wanted more was trading Martin for Ben McLemore.
Mm,
that's the dream. Because the problem with trading Bayelitz is we don't have a serviceable four yet. So if we traded him, we would need to trade him for somebody who probably has, honestly, his skills are perfect for our roster. His ability to pass it, and we desperately need his shooting because we can't shoot the ball. It's just, if he was 2 years younger, he'd be perfect.
Is Gorgui good?
I like Gorgui, yeah. I think Gorgui's a good backup in the NBA. He can defend, he can finish, he kind of looks funny when he runs. But, you know, I think as a backup center, he's good.
Fair enough.
What do you think?
When I watch him play, I feel like he's got, you know, athletic tools. He moves well. He does a lot of things. He reminds me of like a poor man, like a really, really poor man's Serge Ibaka. Like he kind of plays, got that sort of...
What?
listen.
Dude, that's a terrible comparison.
It's not a terrible comparison.
You're just, based on they're from Africa.
That's not true at all. Listen, they both are 6'10". They both... crowd, you know, they kind of play in that sort of ether around the basket defensively. Obviously, he's not as good at defending the rim as Serge, or as I like to call him, Sergey. Sergey Ibaka, because that's what I thought it was for 2 years. They both kind of score in that not a traditional big man way. They kind of take those little short jumpers around the hoop, and Serge likes to pull up from mid-range, and he's always a guy who people thought would break out offensively, but never quite did. And I think it's kind of the same with Gorgui. He's never going to be this scorer, but he's a guy who can put the ball in the basket on occasion. You know, like every once in a while, you want to take a walk and go have some tea at a local deli. You just want to do that every once in a while. It's kind of how Gorgui will score. And on certain days, he'll just want to pull up and hit a basket, but it's not something you're going to see every day. That's my analysis of Gorgui Dieng.
Yeah, I just think it's a terrible comparison. I don't really think they're similar at all, but good point.
And it helps that they're both from Africa.
Yeah. Okay, now we haven't talked enough about Rubio. First game, possibly the best game.
Rubio!
Rubio! Probably 50% of my tweets have just been Rubio in all caps in my life.
We must say we've been following Rubio since he was 14 and entered the Spanish Professional Basketball Association.
Yeah,
is that a thing?
We love Rubes.
The Rube Tube.
The Rube Tube. I don't know when he started EuroLeague. He started professionally at 14. I don't remember which league. It's Barcelona or whatever. But he was unbelievable. 29 points, 14 assists, only one turnover that happened late in the game. Made tons of plays happen. What do you take from that game? Is Rubio, people are talking about his new jump shot, how good it's looking. Is Rubio going to have a breakout year? Is his jump shot going to change?
What's going to happen? I think part of the issue is people don't have a, you know, Rubio has never had the chance to really get into a rhythm of playing 80 games in a season. It's always been cut short by injury. He's playing on injury a lot of the time. What we saw in the last two games was a healthy Ricky Rubio playing with confidence. I don't think he's revolutionized his mid-range jumper, which he took a ton of, by the way, which long term, I don't think will pay off for us. But I think that he is, you know, such an incredible ball handler and able to get space on the floor. And when those shots are open, he needs to take them because it allows our the Timberwolves to get a lot more space when we play the game. So I think, look, if he's got that confidence, keep taking those shots and keep playing. I don't think we're seeing this revolutionized Ricky Rubio. I think we're seeing a healthy Ricky Rubio. I think he's always been this good. He just hasn't had that chance to play with that confidence in his health. And right now we're seeing it, which is why we're about to go 3-0 when we beat Portland. And then we're going to go 4-0, 5-0, 6-0. Wait, we might even make the playoffs. What do you think?
I think Rubio makes us a much, much better basketball team. I've never given up on him and said that, oh, we need to trade him. That being said, I think he needs to be careful about his jump shot. I do not think this is going to be the magic year where he starts hitting all sorts of jump mid-range jumpers at a high clip. The mid-range jump, I'm a huge analytics believer. I believe that has changed the game, and we still rely, don't listen to it enough, and we take too many jump shots and unassisted shots. And I think Rubio needs to be careful about looking for those mid-range jumpers off of the dribble too often. Because honestly, I would be utterly shocked if he shot that at over 40% this season. And so if it's wide open, there's a sense that he might need to take it occasionally in order to make defenders, you know, respect him to open things up. But I think that the shots he needs to be able to hit is he needs to be able to finish at the rim and hit threes. His three-point percentage is actually, it has been serviceable some years. And so I think that's an important shot for him to be able to spread the court when other people have the ball. But that pull-up jumper isn't as essential as people think. Do you remember when Rajon Rondo, people would give him the Rondo treatment in the playoffs and they'd segue off of him?
Yeah.
That was actually good for him. Rubio has the best vision of anybody in the world in terms of basketball, quite possibly. If people segue off of him, it just makes it easy for him to see certain passes and stuff. And there are, you can clog the lane, and there are some issues. But I think if he looks too hard for that pull-up jumper, I do think that will eventually be a negative for the team. And not saying that he can never shoot it, but I think he needs to be careful, and we shouldn't get too excited over such a small clip of his shooting.
Who is Ricky Rubio compared to the greatest players of all time? As in, who does he remind you of as a great player in NBA?
An early Jason Kidd, maybe?
No. John freaking Stockton. He is the Spanish John Stockton, who leads all point guards all time in steals and assists. What does Ricky Rubio do? He gets steals. He gets assists. He can see the floor. He's got fancy dribbles. He's like John Stockton. He's white. He's tall. He plays defense. Is there anything that he's not like John Stockton?
You can't shoot it.
Yes, you're right. That is one thing. But as we saw last night, when he plays at that level, I mean, I thought I was watching the Utah Jazz circa 1996.
He's, okay, I think it's honestly a poor comparison. And here's why. John Stockton, you watch him, he was so boringly good. His cross, he would always do one crossover. He would make the smart, crisp passes. Rubio's a freaking magician. He plays so beautifully. It's like an artwork. He's on there, you know, painting all these incredible passes, seeing things that are unbelievable. And he's just this incredible, just unteachable talent of this crazy.
So you would
field.
Say he's more of a Pete Maravich.
Yeah, except Pistol was an unbelievable shooter. And Pistol wasn't the defender that Rubio is. But his play style isn't like Stockton. Just a couple of the things that they are good at are similar.
We need a name for the Wolves dynasty when they get not one, not two,
not three,
not four, but eight championships. What are we going to call that? Is it the Ricky years? Is it the Wiggins?
It's the
trials. I'm trying to think of a cute name. Is it the
Towns, Wiggins, and Rubio trio?
So Rubio is a part of that conversation.
I don't know. No.
Because he's
okay. If we get eight championships, I don't know. I don't think Rubio would be.
I mean,
our
what's
point
the
guard
magic
crawling.
Number when point guards, you know, struggle?
30.
Are we starting to see it with Chris Paul? Is he over the edge? He's 31, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's a magic number. You know, Steve Nash was his best in his 30s. Got two MVPs. And point guards, it is usually a tad earlier, we tend to see, of when they, because when the, you lose a step at that position, it is magnified so much compared to certain other positions because you're not tall, you're not long, you can't rely on other tools as much. You kind of saw it with Darren Williams and when he became himself after being compared to Chris Paul for all those years. And so, I don't know when he'll lose it, especially because he can't shoot. Maybe he'll figure out how to shoot someday, but that's far in the future.
Yeah, it's not that far. In fact,
listen, we got Tyus Jones.
I know we need to get Tyus Jones playing. I would like it if he is the torch carrier when Rubio decides.
Here's the thing. Do you think Tyus Jones could actually be like? Do you think he could be? Is a ceiling a Mario Chalmers type serviceable point guard with a great team, or could he actually be an above average point guard who makes things happen?
I think his shooting ability gives him the potential to be above average point guard. He plays with a confidence and shoots with a confidence. He's an 89% free throw shooter. He could be a legitimate point guard. I don't know if he's got the size, the athleticism to do it, but he could do it. If I compare Tyus Jones to one player in the history of basketball, it would be Mighty Mouse Damon Stoudemire from the Portland Trailblazers.
Okay.
Am I right? Good scorer, pretty good passer,
really quick,
really quick,
super fast. That's not Tyus Jones. Tyus Jones is a little more John Stockton-esque in the sense that...
Oh, please.
In the sense that what makes him good isn't his athleticism and quickness. It's the fact that he has this great feel, this super high intelligence and IQ of the game. He sees things well. And that's what makes him good, not...
Look at this. Quick. Damon Stoudemire, 5'10", 171 pounds, point guard, 13 points a game, 6 assists, 1 steal. Don't you think that could be about Tyus Jones' career if they gave him the opportunity to do it? I don't see him scoring 28 points a game. Maybe 13, 12, 6 assists. I think it's about right.
I think that'd be sweet if he gets there. I think we need to also harness back. Like, this is a... If he ends up being... You know, a 13.6 assist, that's good. That's a great turnout. There's a very real chance he could not pan out and never be
in the NBA.
Yeah. I like him a lot. I think we should play him, and I think he could be a lot better than what people are saying. The analytics in college loved him, thought he would translate better. So I say play him.
All right, we're going to wrap this thing up by going into a new segment we like to call Happy Jack, Angry Jack.
Yes. All right. With Happy Jack, something I'm very pleased with is obviously the development of Karl Anthony Towns. I got a text the other day after the Philadelphia Sixers' first game. Matt texted me and he said, can you believe what he got? He had 26-7. Maybe we picked the wrong person. And I said, Matt, this is one game. He also had 8 turnovers and you're an idiot. Then what happened? Karl Anthony Towns goes 28-14-4 on his second freaking game. Karl Anthony Towns is looking brilliant. He's able to score in a variety of ways. He's hitting jump shots. He's making very clean post moves. He's playing hard. Karl Anthony Towns is doing awesome, and I'm very happy about that. But for my favorite segment, Angry Jack, I'm pissed off about Kevin Martin. Kevin Martin gets the ball, holds it, and then draws one of those cheap fouls that you call an open gym when you're an old guy and you can't score in any other way. And all of our offense dies. Kevin Martin may be able to score some points for us that might, you know, do a little bit in the short run, but it is completely halting the development of Zach LaVine, and that is brutal. It is completely halting the development of Shabazz Muhammad, of Gorgui Dieng, and it is just terrible to watch. He plays this old school basketball, and it is infuriating to watch. I cannot stand Kevin Martin playing on our team.
I need to defend myself. I sent you that text about Okafor because he might just be the next Karl Malone. He is that good offensively. He moves his feet so flipping well. He's got the softest baby touch in the world. I don't know. He may be Karl Malone. But the good news is that Karl Anthony Towns might be the next Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Allah, Allah.
Let's go. All right. Now time for a segment called Happy Matt, Angry Matt. Are we ready?
Yes.
Well, see, today I am very happy for a few reasons. Number one, we are 2-0. We are a winning basketball team. The last time the Minnesota Timberwolves was a winning basketball team, I was like 7 years old. And I am so pumped that we are winning. I believe that we are going to make the playoffs. And guess what, Jack? I don't know if you remember, but you bet me $100 that we wouldn't win 30 games. And I said, no, we're not going to win 30. We're not going to win 31. We're not going to win 32. We're going to win 38 games, which might actually be enough for that 8th seed. You know why? Because New Orleans is garbage. Karl Anthony Towns is better than Anthony Davis. And we are going to get the 8th seed. And guess what? Next week, we play Portland. And that is an easy bucket because they don't got Aldridge. Let's go. All right, now for this section called Angry Matt. Hey, Jack, guess what?
What?
I'm kind of torqued off. You want to know why?
Tell me about it.
I'll tell you three reasons. Sam freaking Mitchell. Sam Mitchell is not the future of this team. You do not put a head coach, granted interim, rest in peace, Flip. You do not put an interim who was under 500 as a head coach at other places. Sam Mitchell plays and coaches like he's coaching middle school girls. We shoot mid-range jumpers. We stop the ball. He does not use Wiggins like we should, like he is Clyde Drexler, which is who we believe Wiggins will be someday. Listen, Sam Mitchell, you're a great assistant. You're a wise old man. And we respect you as a person, but not as our coach. We wish we could have you President Hoiberg, but we will settle for Tim Duncan when he retires.
Or Shane Battier.
Or Shane Battier.
That's my pick.
I we like also Shane. Like Shane.
Shane. With, oh, this is something we never talked about. Is Angry Matt over?
Yes, I'm done.
Okay. This is what I want to leave you with. Is if we get a new young coach, which we both want, we think Doug Collins... We should chase him as an assistant coach. When he was interviewed by Zach Lowe last season, he said, Zach Lowe asked him if he'd be interested in coaching again. And Doug Collins said he would not be interested in head coaching, but possibly being an assistant and just focusing on the development of players, because that's what he was most passionate about, but not having to deal with all the responsibilities that the head coach does. That's something he'd possibly be interested in. And I think he'd be a perfect... That's exactly what we need. And so he'd be a great mentor as an assistant coach to our new young coach who's going to change the organization.
Very good. Here's how we're going to end every single show. On the count of three, we are going to say what we are thinking. One, two, three. Andrew Wiggins.